You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Instead of rejecting good ideas because we didn't think of them first, let's use the best ideas from both sides. Instead of fighting over who gets the credit, let's try sharing it. This amazing country can do anything we put our minds to. I'll ask Democrats and independents to serve with me, and my administration will set a new standard for transparency and accountability.
That was part of John McCain's speech last night, and joining me now to discuss how well he did is Clark Judge, who was a speechwriter and special assistant to President Ronald Reagan and Vice President George H.W. Bush. He also wrote speeches for the 1988 and 1992 Republican conventions. Currently, Mr. Judge is Managing Director, White House Writers Group. Welcome to our show.
I'm glad to be here.
So overall, how well do you think John McCain did?
Well, I think he did very well. John McCain is a different kind of speaker than, his opponent, in that he is a simpler speaker, a more direct speaker, more factual in the sense of speaking about specifics without a lot of around them speakers. So I think this was very much a John McCain performance. He laid out where he wanted to go. That was essential, that he lay out his view of where the country should go, of what the country's problems are, and his view of reform. He has worked as a reformer. He has been in opposition, really, to both parties in Congress for all of his career. He has been critical of, and both supportive and critical of the president, depending on where he thought things were going, particularly on spending, on the drift in Iraq at one before the surge, and on a variety of other issues. And he told about this sense of needing to reach out to both sides, but also to break up the inside game of Washington. That is critical to his campaign. It is the central theme of his campaign, that cooperation should become part of Washington, but that the insider game should be broken up.
Well, there were no memorable phrases, no ringing rhetoric, as we have come to expect in many of these speeches. And you're saying that the plain speaking was definitely a strategy, or is it just the way that John McCain writes a speech?
I think that's John McCain. I think that's the way he is. That's the way he always speaks, very direct, very simply, very understandably, and very straightforwardly. Let me just say something about memorable phrases. In modern political rhetoric, and this goes back to the Clinton years, memorable phrases are less prevalent than they were, say, in the period I served in President Reagan's term, where we worked hard to produce phrases that would be picked up and widely quoted. I've attended dinners of speechwriters from both parties where this was remarked on, in one case by Arthur Schlesinger Jr., a speechwriter for Kennedy. I believe one of the reasons for that is that the media environment has changed. When we were writing in the Reagan White House, we basically had three networks some radio networks, three television networks, and some radio networks and major newspapers. And getting quoted was the game, because that's the way you got your message out. In this media environment, more and more people, perhaps even most people, see large portions of the speeches that the candidates give. And so the candidates don't depend as much upon the memorable quote to break through screen of editors and reporters.
We opened with that talk about being kind of nonpartisan. He suggested that he would listen to good ideas without regard to the party involved. But wasn't that a contradiction to all that had preceded? Pretty much everyone else was seriously attacking Barack Obama and suggesting that the Democrats didn't have any good ideas?
Well, remember that Barack Obama and in particular Joe Biden and a number of the speakers at the Democratic Convention had strongly attacked Senator McCain. After Senator McCain announced his nominee for vice president, Governor Palin, there was one of the biggest rounds of attacks, campaigns of attack we have ever seen against a vice presidential candidate, probably the biggest campaign of attack. So there was a lot to be, there was a lot of record to set straight and a lot of contrasts that the other side had made, in our view, a Republican view, in distorted ways, that had to be answered. And that's what you saw in those two nights, responding to the attacks and setting out our sense of where those, how those issues fell down. There's a lot, as Senator McCain stated early in the in his speech, there's always a lot of back and forth, to and fro in American politics.
But are you suggesting...
At the end of the day, he was saying the scorched earth approach has to stop.
But are you suggesting that people should not have questioned who is Sarah Palin? What does she stand for? What is her character like?
What I'm suggesting is that a lot of this was on the record, and very evident on the record, that some of the stuff, particularly about her family and her children, was off bounds, and that if they question, as they should, the record, although I think it's went well beyond questioning to smearing, that it's our responsibility to the American people to respond.
And when Senator McCain suggests that he will never serve special interests, and somebody points out that quite a few lobbyists have given him money, he was a member of the Keating Five in the past, is that also crossing the line, or is that simply what you do in these kinds of campaigns? And if people can find things about Barack Obama's past along those lines, they'll do the same sort of thing.
Well, and people have found things about Barack Obama's past, including some unsavory associations he's had.
And some people felt on the Democratic side that they crossed the line.
I would say that if they feel that, they should respond. On Wednesday night, we responded.
Now, last night, when they were talking with Jim Lehrer on PBS, David Brooks and Mark Shields said that the theme of the speech was moderate, but the policies proposed were fairly conservative. Do you think that his speech was consistent then?
I think his speech was quite consistent. What he proposed was a view of where the economy is, where the country is, what the country's troubles are. But he also, and he stated what his views of all of that are. But what he also stated was that he has two high priorities. One is to break up the insider, scratch-your-back, scratch-my-back game in Washington. The emblem of this is earmarks, which are a form of almost like trading currency in a board game in Congress that have been driving the rise in spending by the kinds of trades that are made. At the same time, he said that in breaking up that game, he was also going to reach out and try to find common ground with between Democrats and Republicans for the public interest. And that's not contradictory. That's cleaning up government and making it work.
This morning's headline, one of them anyway, on the front page of the New York Times, was "The Party in Power Running as If It Weren't." And maybe we can listen to an example from Senator McCain's speech that last night that might have given them that impression.
I fight to restore the pride and principles of our party. We were elected to change Washington, and we let Washington change us. We lost the trust of the American people when some Republicans gave in to the temptations of corruption. We lost their trust when, rather than reform government, both parties made it bigger. We lost their trust when, instead of freeing ourselves from a dangerous dependence on foreign oil, both parties and Senator Obama passed another corporate welfare bill for oil companies. We lost their trust when we valued our power over our principles. We're going to change that. We're going to recover the people's trust by standing up again to the values Americans admire. The party of Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Reagan is going to get back to basics.
Now, although he did extend some of the criticism toward the Democrats, that included some pretty harsh words for Republicans, including, "We lost the trust of the American people and we gave in to the temptations of corruption." Do you think that those words will upset some members of the party base?
I'm sure they will. But let me say, in a personal sense, I wouldn't expect you to know this, but I've been writing on that particular theme. I've written several columns on it over the last year, actually the last several years, including as recently as one that appeared Thursday morning in the Wall Street Journal, saying that Republicans had become too much of an inside game, that they had lost trust. This is something that I'm in no way coordinated with the campaign. But I think that anyone within the party, it's the reason the party lost in 2006, a big part of the reason the party lost in 2006, that there were many, many Republicans who felt just as John McCain did, spoke last night, and who either didn't vote or voted for Democratic candidates out of a sense of what's the difference between them and the GOP. That's not why we sent these people to Congress. So he'll find a strong resonance within the party, which got pretty fed up about 2 years ago.
Well, several days ago, Rick Davis, Senator McCain's campaign manager, said, "We are in the worst Republican environment since Richard Nixon in 1972. Is that the reason that Senator McCain seems to be joining Barack Obama in stressing the word change, although we're talking about different change. It's got to be a little difficult when your party was in power for all three branches of the government for 6 years, and you had the president for every year of the 21st century.
Well, what I would say is that you've got here a candidate who has been in opposition to those trends within the party that led to the environment that Rick Davis was talking about. There are two big areas where the party has lost both in Congress, has lost both the trust of a number of Republicans and has seen the independents drift. One of them has been in excessive spending, which I believe Senator McCain referenced in that clip you played. The current annual budget, discretionary spending budget of the federal government, is about $100 billion annually over the long-term trend line, and as of 2001. And that's just something that has deeply alienated large parts of a number of people in the party, and that has told with independents. Senator McCain has been a consistent opponent to that trend. He has fought that trend. That's why there are a lot of people. You ask, are there people in the base who will be unhappy? I don't know about the base, but I do know that there are a lot of people in Congress, senators and congressmen of both parties, who really don't much care for Senator McCain because he has been such a vocal and in some cases effective, but he's from the Senate. He hasn't had that strong a platform for operation in opposing this trend in the government and in Washington. He is running for reform, and what he is saying about reform and the condition in Washington and the reason so many of us of both parties and independents are unhappy with where the national government is going. He is saying that the problem there isn't this or that passing administration. It is the insider game, and he is going to break it up.
My guest is Clark Judge, who was a speechwriter and special assistant to President Ronald Reagan and to Vice President George H.W. Bush, and has been involved in any number of Republican campaigns, including writing speeches for the 1988-1992 Republican conventions. I don't know if you wrote the "Read My Lips" line.
No, I did not.
But that was one of the more memorable ones. The problem with some of those lines is that they come back to haunt you later. I don't know whether Senator McCain said anything that will come back to haunt him later. But let's talk about something else. Everybody has ridiculed.
Could I break in for a second?
Sure.
The problem with a line like that is that if you are going to say it, you, when the chips are down, you've got to live it.
Yes.
And if you don't live it, the public is going to take note. Essentially, it's like going in and telling your boss you're going to do something, and then you don't do it. And the boss comes back and says, well, you didn't do it, so we're going to have a performance review. And that is, so when you make, there's a lot of talk about meaningless promises. I don't believe that. I've been in politics for a long time. Someone like Senator McCain knows that when he makes a promise, he must live it. And what you saw at the end last night, that determination, really a display of iron determination that I've never seen in a speech, was Senator McCain saying he's going to live the promises he's made.
When he says that he's a maverick, and then the Democrats point out that he voted with President Bush 90% of the time, how does he get the two to jive?
Yeah, that's a good question. And let me say this. As has frequently been pointed out, every senator votes with his party 90% of the time because an awful lot of the stuff that goes through is consensus stuff in the Congress. Barack Obama, for example, according to one source, votes with his party 97% of the time. What we know about Senator McCain is that on a number of big issues, we've discussed them already, so I'm not going to go through them all. On a number of big issues, he has deviated from his party, he has opposed his party, he has criticized his party, and he has criticized the other party as well. He is an equal opportunity criticizer.
This is the first Republican convention since Bob Dole to focus so heavily on a candidate's personal military service. How do you think McCain's and Dole's performances compare? And how do they compare with what the Democrats try to do, emphasizing John Kerry's military service in 2004?
Well, I won't comment on 2004, but I will say this. Both Senator Dole and Senator McCain were genuine military heroes in different conflicts, obviously. They brought that military experience, and Senator McCain brought very deep military experience because, remember, he's a graduate of the Naval Academy. He's the son and grandson of of admirals, and he commanded in the Navy for quite a long time, including, I believe, he was commander of the largest air wing within the Navy. So that's particularly now, and particularly with the questions of commander-in-chief questions, that's all highly relevant experience, as is his what you heard last night, the personal commitment and the sense of personal determination that he displayed in his captivity, which again gave a sense that when he says something, he lives it.
Well, doesn't everyone know that story by now? Why was it important to spend so much time on it in this speech?
I actually that question was brought up on one of the, and I'm not sure which one because I heard it secondhand. I was in the hall at the time, but was brought up by a Clinton strategist or asked of a Clinton strategist during one of the interviews after the speech, who said that you've got to remember that the Democratic primary race absolutely riveted the nation. So the knowledge of the Democratic field was very deep by the end of it, that the Republican race more or less disappeared from the screen. So for Senator McCain, a lot of his audience actually didn't know his story. It didn't know much about it. There were elements in it that I found new. But we also have seen some polling recently. We saw some polling about 2 weeks ago that said that the public did, by that point, pretty much know Barack Obama and was sort of tired of hearing his story because they'd heard it so many times. But they did not know Senator McCain. And it's and again, that's partly because the Democratic primary, as you'll recall, went quite a bit longer. It received intense coverage. The Senator Obama in particular has received intense coverage. Senator McCain was to some extent, and the campaign was to some extent, reintroducing a public that had not heard a lot from them for the prior month or two to the American people.
Several pundits have said that this election is no longer a referendum on George W. Bush, but on Barack Obama. How much of speech writing for these conventions is about defining the opponent, and how much about defining the candidate?
Well, actually, I would put it a different way. Your basic task, at least as I think of it, is defining the agenda. The opponent and your own candidate, their personal qualities, what they've devoted their lives to, have to do with the agenda. They have to do with resolve and seeing it through. They have to do with what you do as events throw the unexpected at the candidate, at the newly elected president, as has happened many times, for example, in the last 8 years with 9/11 and the subprime crisis, all of which were unanticipated and probably unanticipatable. But we're in September now. The first, between now and, say, mid-October, part of the dynamic of the campaign will be whose agenda will be the focus of discussion in the last several weeks of the campaign. So what you are doing at a convention is defining your agenda, defining your sense of the moment and your sense of the future. And you use the candidates, the definition of your candidate and of the other candidate in setting up that contrast, but it all comes back to agenda.
How accurate do these speeches have to be? For example, Senator McCain said last night that the United States had the second highest business tax rate in the world. That's true, but only to an extent. According to the Brookings Institute, the United States has so many generous special tax preferences for businesses that it collects the fourth lowest corporate tax revenues among nations of the industrialized world.
Well, what you're getting here is a key economic debate.
But it's accentuating the positive and ignoring the negative?
No, it's what you're getting here is a key economic debate. The Republican Party has long argued that tax rates are what drive economic behavior, and that and Senator McCain argues that preferences distort economic behavior, and so do a number of economists. The Democratic Party has been more inclined to argue that average rates, not marginal rates, but average rates, drive economic behavior, and that preferences are okay. That's a key debate. Now, it is absolutely true that our tax rates on the corporate tax are the highest in the world.
Second
highest in the world. From the point of view of from the Republican or economic point of view, that is a serious problem. The Democrats may say, well, you get this preference and that preference, so you'd collect less. From the Republican point of view, that distorts investment. It discourages investment. It drives investment into suboptimal areas where you have preferences. And that's a very, very big problem for the economy.
Well,
for investment and growth.
Let's look at another claim. Both Governor Palin and Senator McCain said that she was staunchly opposed to federal earmark spending and to the now infamous Bridge to Nowhere. But according to the Associated Press, as governor, Mrs. Palin requested $750 million from Congress and opposed the bridge only after she was ridiculed or not she, but the bridge itself was ridiculed in the mainstream media. So when you're crafting a speech for a political convention, how heavily do you research the topics you're writing about?
Well, you have researchers and fact checkers, but the fact is that that Governor Palin canceled that bridge. Now, some may characterize it as having come late. I would say she canceled it once she actually knew about it, and there are hundreds. She comes from a state where the senators and a member of Congress have made an art form of getting preferences for the state. And there are quite a few, and that's one of the reasons Senator Stevens is in trouble. It's also she has opposed that group in the state, the insider group in the state, and they're in her own party. And she... part of that opposition was her canceling of the Bridge to Nowhere, which would have been, basically sticking a finger in the eye of one of the most powerful men in her state, Senator Stevens, who's now running for reelection but also has some legal problems. She was bucking up, as she has in any number of times. She was bucking the most powerful man in the state political establishment.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us today, Clark Judge, who is Managing Director of the White House Writers Group. It's been a pleasure analyzing the speech with you.
Well, it's a great pleasure being with you, and thanks so much for having me on.